Verse 27. And when Jesus stepped out on the land, there met him a certain man from the city who had demons for a long time. And he wore no clothes, nor did he live in a house, but in the tombs. What a horror story. This man's life had degenerated into a nightmare, an uncivilized, freakish existence, possessed of demons, living in a cemetery. Verse 28, when he saw Jesus, he cried out, fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." And that man in the flesh could not have known Christ's identity, that Jesus was the Son of God. But during the relatively brief time of the New Testament, there was this spiritual war that was at a fevered pitch. And during warfare, even today, rules change. And God had changed the rules at that time and allowed demons to possess human beings. And verse 29, for Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for it had often seized him, and he was kept under guard, bound with chains and shackles. That is, the people of the town had restrained him. And he broke the bonds and was driven by the demon into the wilderness. Now let's talk about that as a side note for a moment. Recall that Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days, and there the devil came to tempt him. And the demon here drove this man into the wilderness. The Bible has influenced our language and our culture to an extraordinary degree. And perhaps these incidents have helped form our Western concept of civilization versus those who are uncivilized, opposed to the barbaric life of, say, natives who have not learned to manage their environment. Well, remember what God had said to the Jews before they entered the promised land? He said in Exodus 23, I will not drive out the Gentile nations. I will not drive the Gentiles out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out from before you until you have increased and you inherit the land. In other words, if God clears this land, it'll take the Jews so long to re-inhabit it that it'll become filled with wild animals. And that would be a real problem. I'm not a fan of reintroducing wolves and other deadly predators to Colorado. I would rather the land become safer for our use and for our children to enjoy, for us to hike in the mountains and even in rural parks and even for kids to play in their own backyards without an increasing threat of harm by wildlife. I recall, I don't know who remembers the story, a woman jogger in California who was attacked by a mountain lion. And the mountain lion was later killed by the authorities. And if I recall, the woman had two kids, two little kids, and the mountain lion had killed the woman. And so right away, the animal rights movement started raising money, not for the kids, but for the cubs of the mountain lion. And they raised a lot of money, $40,000, $50,000. I guess they're going to open an account for the mountain lion cubs. And so Rush Limbaugh decided to put things in perspective, and he asked for donations for the children, and he raised a lot of money. He didn't give the exact amount, but it was hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, for the kids. And I was really thankful that he did that. Well, in Leviticus, God warned the Jews, chapter 26, if you walk contrary to me and are not willing to obey me, I will send wild beasts among you, which shall rob you of your children, destroy your livestock.
Bye. greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Now, we have apparently we have a demon in our board, our mixing board. And so we're having technical difficulties, if you can tell. So we'll we need to get that Christian minister from Theology Online over here. He exercises demons. Now, he exercises demons. He goes online. His screen name is Freak, which is weird. And he's been a Christian for a long time. And his ministry, he tries to exercise demons out of people. Now, I don't buy that as a valid ministry. But I wonder what he charges to do mixing boards. Because we've got a good Mackie mixer. You know, Mackie is a great name in mixing boards. We've got a good maxi mixer, perfectly sufficient for this talk show, just really the perfect piece of equipment. And I don't get it. I don't understand why we're having these. You think it's a demon? Come out! Come out! Maybe it's a demon in there. It's not even made in the Orient or anything. I don't understand why it's not working properly. But, you know, I'm not a techie kind of guy. I'm not a hardware guy at all. I'm a software guy from way back. I worked for Microsoft as a program manager on their network operating system. Don't tell other people. I know. Their network operating system had plenty of security problems. But I'm a software guy, not a hardware guy. I'm not even comfortable plugging something in. I don't like doing it. You get a new VCR, I don't want to plug it in. When I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache helicopter, I was in the simulation department, and we'd sit in an Apache. Now, most of the simulators were boards and trainers that you just stand before it like a classroom board, and it simulates how the thing functions on the board. But then there's the simulator that's actually, you sit in the cockpit, and it's the body of an Apache that was taken and built into a simulator. And so we'd sit in the Apache and open up the hangar door at night in Culver City, California, right next to LAX in Los Angeles, the airport. We'd open up the hangar door at night and look through the IHADs, infrared night vision system. And you'd see some guy in town, you know, getting out of his car, and you could see his lighter in his pocket. It was still hot. And so anyway, there was a big red button. So we're running the simulator, and a big red button. And the hardware guys, they did the hardware. We did the software. The hardware guys had a big sign on this button. It said, "Do not push this button." So I'm in the... You know, to a software guy, there's no such thing as don't push the button. No such thing. Because, you know, it's just computer. You just do it, undo it. So I pushed a button. And one of the hardware guys came yelling out of his office and said, "You stupid software guys! Don't you know when it says don't push the button, it means don't push the lousy button?" I never found out why we couldn't push the button. But anyway, apparently it fouled up something. So there's a problem in our board, and we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Hey, firefighters in New York City have given up their battle against the rats. You know, New York City has a lot of rats, and they're always fighting the rats. And I remember PETA, that group, PETA, the animal rights wackos. What does PETA stand for? People Eating Tasty Animals? That's not what it stands for. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They were back a few years ago, New York City's trying to eradicate as many rats as they can, and PETA was protesting them and saying they shouldn't kill the rats, they should give them birth control. as a humanitarian thing toward the rats. So at any rate, now these rats have infested for a long time now this one in particular, this fire station for the New York Fire Department. And they have just decided to give up. In Queens, this fire station has been battling rats, and the rodents have won. Every attempt at extermination has failed. The firefighters, they go to take out their pots and pans. You know, they live there for so many hours, you know, for a day or a couple. I don't know how they do it, but they cook there. They sleep there. So they're always ready. And they pull out their pots and pans, and there's rat droppings in the pots and pans. And that's obviously gross. They poison the rats, but then the rats die in the walls, and the stench is horrendous. And so they've given up, and Stephen Humensky of the Uniformed Firefighters Association said that they're going to demolish the fire station and build a new one. In New York City, what, with the unions and all? Probably cost, what, $30 million? I'm just guessing. But, yeah, that's gross. That's gross. When we get a fly in our home, you know, we have a lot of kids here, boys, and they're constantly running in and out. And when one fly comes in, I get all the toddlers in the house to hunt the fly. And we're going to kill that fly. And you know why we kill it? You know, liberals say all life is the image of God. You ever hear a liberal say that? They say, don't kill a cockroach. Don't kill a bug. And my friend in Boulder, Colorado, was in the checkout stand at a grocery store. And there was a little bug on the checkout counter. And so the woman in front of him said, oh, look, a bug. Let's put it outside. And he grabbed it and he threw it on the ground. He's a big guy, 6'5". And he stomped on it and he said, don't worship bugs. And so liberals say all life is a reflection of God. It's the image of God. I had a pastor of some liberal church in Denver on the show, and he said that. I said, what if there's a cockroach in your kitchen? Wouldn't you just kill it? Oh, no, I'd put it outside. And then I said, well, how about what's your position on abortion? Oh, I'm pro-choice. Oh, so you defend the life of a cockroach, but you kill a little baby boy or girl in the womb who's sucking their thumb, playing with their toes. Isn't all life part of the image of God? Isn't at least that little baby girl sucking her thumb, isn't that the image of life? Why are you going to kill her, stomp on her, stamp her out, but save the cockroach? What's with you, liberals? You people are broken, rebellious against God, evil. Ugh, it's gross. At any rate, we'll be back after this. 1-800-836-9278.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty, and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. Have you listened to our Bible study albums? Well, we've been producing these Bible studies for years here at Bob Inyart Live, and we have such a good time recording the Bible studies, and people tell us they just love receiving them in the mail and listening to the studies. If you could go to our website at kgov.com, look at our store, and see what, you know, on Genesis and Exodus. You could check out the New Testament, Gospel of John, Romans, Galatians, Timothy, the book of Revelation. Or you could subscribe. You could look at each of those, see what they're about. Or you can subscribe to our monthly Bible study album. For $34.95 a month, you get mailed to you each month automatically a Bible study album. And people tell us that they just love it, that once a month they get a package in the mail, open it up, and it's Bible study tapes. And then they've got something just throughout their year. Throughout the year, every month, they get this neat opportunity to join in on another Bible study. And everything we offer has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So you can call us at 800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278 to subscribe or go online at kgov.com, kgov.com, and check out the albums. You might want to start with one. Just test us. one 800 836 9278, if you'd like to call into the show, Bob Inyart Live, or reach the order desk. And so liberals have all these conflicting opinions, and they're so contradictory. They're just so flat-out contradictory. And so what's with that? The liberals who believe that you know, God is in everything, and so they're pro-animal rights. And they believe, they even defend bugs, even bugs. I remember the liberal columnist in at the Miami Herald who said, if you're on the highway and there's a swarm of bugs, it's not right to just drive through them and kill them. You should pull over and wait until the swarm passes. And then be careful when you start up, because some bugs will straggle behind. And so you might have to swerve around them. I mean, you know, not all liberals are that whacked out, but a typical liberal has this dilemma that they defend animals and many even bugs, but animals, but they advocate the right to kill unborn children. A little girl sucking her thumb, playing with her toes, sleeping, dreaming, knowing her mother's voice, and, oh, go ahead and kill her, but I'll defend the dog who's going to be put to sleep. But the little girl, oh, kill the girl. How could that be? How could that be? Well, it's because they're not just confused. It's sin. People have this natural ability to know the truth and oppose it. It's an antenna. Do you ever see My Favorite Martian? People have this antenna, and it's they can discern where God is or what position God would take, and they so consistently take an opposite position. That's the primary difference between right and left wing. The right wing is right. The left wing is wrong. That's why we call it the right wing. Now, you should know that, right? Right is right, left is wrong. Even in different languages around the world, like in French, for example. The French. In French, left, the word for left, your left hand, means sinister. Because the left wing are sinister. They're evil. I was telling this to a guy from China. We're flying somewhere, flying to Chicago years ago. And I didn't know this guy sitting next to me. And I said, you know, the words for right and left, in so many languages, the word for right hand also is the word for correct, for right. Because the right wingers are right. God is a right wing God because he's righteous. He's a righteous God. And those who disagree will be left behind. And so he got out his notepad and he did this Chinese pictograph, this symbol thing. And he said, look at that. I said, oh, that's, what's that mean? He said, that's right, like right hand. I said, oh, cool. He said, guess what? It's the same symbol for correct. And I said, cool. Too cool. That's great. Yeah. And those concepts of right and left wing, they go way back. Remember Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes? He wrote, I have a hockey jersey with this on it. You know, on the back, it says Enyart. And on the sleeve, it says Ecclesiastes. On the other sleeve, 10-2. Ecclesiastes 10-2. That the good man's heart is on his right, and the fool's heart is on his left. Now, that's 3,000 years old. And you think that started right then? No, it didn't. So anyway, the left wing, they're going to be left behind. When God takes those who want to live with him forever to his home in heaven and leaves behind those who don't want to live with God, well, they end up going to hell forever because that's where they want to live. And so they get what they want, really. Okay. 1-800-836-9278. Our God is a right-wing God. He reigns forever and ever. The U.S. government, our government, has fined a woman for being a human shield. This is a good story, except for the fact that we fined her. We shouldn't have fined her. Maybe flogged her would be much more appropriate than fining her. But this is out of Florida, Sarasota, Florida. A retired school teacher went to Iraq to serve as a human shield, and now the U.S. government has fined her about $10,000, in which she's saying she refuses to pay. And the Department of the Treasury sent this letter to Faith Fippinger saying that she broke the law by crossing the Iraqi border before the war, and her travel to Iraq violated U.S. sanctions that prohibited American citizens from engaging in virtually all contact with Iraq. And so apparently about 20 of the 300 human shields were from America. And she spent about 3 months there. And a quote from her back then was, "We are planning to stay here in the refinery if war breaks out. We are staying here because we think this war is unjust." And if I recall, all the human shields left by the time the war broke out, at least the Americans. I think all the ones that I recall, all the reports I had seen, they're a bunch of chickens, right? And they why didn't they go sit at an ammunition depot? They sat in hospitals and schools and places we said we weren't going to bomb. They're chickens. But at any rate, what's wrong with fining a criminal? Why is it bad to fine a criminal? There should be no fines. That should not exist as a punishment. In America, nowhere in the world, if you commit a crime and you're convicted, you should not be fined. Now, why is that? There should never be a fine as a penalty for any crime because it creates a conflict of interest. You know how the government is supposedly all concerned about conflict of interest? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm the judge, and my daughter's niece's cousin's neighbor knows one of the witnesses, aunts, lawyers. And so I have to recuse myself from this case because I want to go golfing tomorrow, and it's going to be a 3-day kiss. And so no conflict of interest at all, except for when the government fines criminals that are convicted, the government gets the money. And so if you have a county court system and the county court system collects a few million dollars a year from convicting people, it's just like clockwork. It's an assembly line. Well, then there's this huge conflict of interest. The county passes the laws so that the laws increase the revenue to the county. And the judge gets paid better and better benefits and better retirement if the county has a lot of money. How could you have no conflict of interest when the system gets paid for having convicted criminals? How could that possibly not be a conflict of interest? In God's criminal justice system, the government does not benefit from crime. The government should never benefit from crime. There should not be any systematic benefit to the government for crime. Just shouldn't be. For one thing, it undermines the credibility of the whole system. You know, if you go to jail and talk to the criminals, a common refrain is they'll say, it's all about money. Oh, yeah, I got convicted of drunk driving. And you know why? Because I had to go to these classes for 40 weeks and they wanted me to pay $58 per class for 40 weeks. It's all about money. And I had to pay the court and pay the processing, and pay this, pay that. And they say it's all about money, and it's hard to disagree with them. I remember the sheriff of Arapahoe County, who's gone now, and he was angry that he got a speeding ticket, stopped for speeding. And the sheriffs in Arapahoe County, they never wrote speeding tickets. They just didn't write speeding tickets because the money didn't go to the county. It didn't go to the sheriff's department. It went to the county, the county books. And so they didn't write speeding tickets, the sheriffs. Then the law was changed so that the speeding ticket revenue went to the sheriff's department. And now they write plenty of tickets, plenty of tickets. So people get a ticket. I get, you know, tickets, speeding tickets are just a license that middle class and wealthy people pay for the right to drive faster than poor people. That's it. If you want to drive faster, you just have to pay for the license. And you could drive faster, and they don't care. They don't care just as long as you pay for the fast driving license. That's it. So anyway, so we're fining this woman about $10,000. And if she doesn't pay soon, the fine will go up, of course. And she could go to jail for up to 12 years. So, and she sent a letter and she said, I'm not paying anything toward this evil government. And therefore, you should consider the alternative, which means going to jail, which is also a lame-brain punishment. I mean, our government, what does our government get right? It's so frustrating. Do we have to think of everything for you guys or what? Can't you get anything right on your own? Jail is school for criminals. Jail is a bad idea. Jail makes the victims pay because it costs thousands and thousands of dollars. It costs more money to keep somebody in some flunky prison than it does to send them to Harvard. Why should we spend $20,000 a year punishing people? You're punishing the victims twice. First, they were victimized by a crime, and then they have to have high taxes to pay to keep these 2 million criminals behind bars. It's inane. And when you send somebody to jail, they get worse while they're there because they hang out with all the bad guys. God never said that the government should fine criminals who are convicted, and he never said you should set up schools for criminals so that all the bad guys could hang out together and get worse. He didn't say that. He said he authorized three forms of punishment: flogging, restitution, and capital punishment. That's it. Those are the only three you need. That's it. It's real simple. 1-800-836-9278. That's our number, 1-800-836-9278, the order line. And have you considered reading the plot manuscript? You know, we had a woman, a gal came to Denver Bible Church 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And she'd heard the show on the air, and she ended up – we got to meet her, and she ended up getting a copy of the plot manuscript and took a trip to Utah, came back a couple weeks later, read the whole plot, and she's – you know, so many friends like her have told us, wow, it's fun to study the Bible. It is fun to study the Bible. It really is. Now, it could be discouraging if – here's how it gets discouraging. If you don't have a solid overview of the whole Bible and you know what you believe, but you don't exactly know why because you've been told or you've heard it over and over on the radio or wherever. So you know what you believe, but you don't quite understand why, and you open up the Bible and you read a chapter, and how many things in the chapter don't make sense to you? How many things? Try it. Just try it sometime. Just open up a chapter in the Bible, read it, and see if it makes sense to you. And the reason so many Christians get discouraged reading the Bible is because we don't start with a foundation, with a solid overview of the whole Bible. And when you don't have that, then almost everything becomes a difficulty. And so that's why we offer the plot manuscript. 330 pages for $49.95 plus shipping and handling, 30-day money-back guarantee. If you're not thrilled with what you've learned about the overview of the whole Bible, and then you start to dig into the details. And then it's a lifetime of rewarding Bible study. So if you're interested, check us out on the web at kgov.com or call us at 800-8-NYARDS. (1-800-836-9278) Program note, on Wednesday night, we're planning to have an interview with the former FBI agent, Gary Aldrich, who wrote the best-selling book a few years back, Unlimited Access, when he worked in the Clinton White House, and he wrote about that. And we interviewed him back then. And now he's got a new book out about the hijacking of the Democratic Party, by which I guess he means they hijacked it themselves. But it'll be fun to talk to Gary Aldrich Wednesday night. And let's see. Ralph Nader said if he had been elected president, 9/11 would not have happened. Ralph Nader, you know the liberal Ralph Nader, pro-abort, pro-homo, pro-prostitution, pro-pornography, pro-everything evil, anti-everything good, Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader said if he had been elected president, that 9/11 would not have happened because when he became president, right away he would have ordered that cockpit doors would be hardened in airplanes. He really said that. That's on our board operator said he really said that. It's on usnews.com. usnews.com. They presented get a load of this. That is just so obviously so stupid. Now we have long advocated at Bob and Yurt Live that pilots should carry guns. And in fact, in the 70s, you know what our – I've got to go to the phones here. But you know what our national policy was in the 70s toward hijacking? You know what it was? Our policy was whatever the hijacker tells you to do, do it. Comply with everything. That was our national policy. We had dozens and dozens of hijackings. It's just so ridiculous. So the policy should be that the crew or the pilots can carry guns, as can any law enforcement officer who's off duty or flying carry guns. And if there's a hijacker, shoot them. Now, that's a really good policy. That's a policy they have on El Al Airlines, the safest airline in the world and the most hated airline in the world because it's run by Israel. And the entire Islamic world hates the Jews. And the Jews are the target of Islamic terrorism, and yet it's the safest airline in the world. Let's go to the phones. Is this in Greenville? Jeff, speak your mind.
How are you doing?
Doing well, sir.
Good. Hey, I have a have a question that came up for discussion the other night with a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I know you've put a video out on divorce and remarriage.
That's right.
Now, here's what my buddy's struggling with, is his wife has basically committed adultery against him more than once and has decided to leave him. Now, he would like to go out and start dating again, and he's getting conflicting messages from different people within the church.
Right.
Some saying he has to wait till the divorce is final. Others saying, no, you know, she's left you, and just because our legal system takes maybe 2 years to complete a divorce, you shouldn't have to sit around and feel sorry for yourself.
Well,
so I wondered what is biblically correct. He wants to do what's right by the Bible, but he can't seem to get a clear...
Yeah.
He says the written divorce is basically when she said she doesn't want to be married and she left him, in his eyes.
Yeah, well, that's a very convenient position for him to take.
Sure.
Right? And probably before he was going through his own divorce, he wouldn't have taken that position, probably. The Bible doesn't address that explicitly, but I think tangentially it does. For example, in the book of Ezra, is it Ezra? Where we find out that God commanded the Jews to divorce their wives that they married against God's covenant because God had told them not to marry pagan wives, Gentile wives. And so they were told to divorce those wives. And it took quite a long time. And they did the divorces according to the law. They divorced their wives according to the law. And it took, if I recall, it took months. And so while they were going through all these divorces, they were still married until they were divorced. Jesus said to the woman at the well, and that's even either in Ezra or Nehemiah. Why don't I see if I could pull that up here? Jesus told the woman at the well, remember he saw the Samaritan woman?
Yes.
And he said to her, she said, I'm going to go tell my husband what you're saying. And he said, you don't have a husband. And she was a bit stunned by that. And he said, you've had five husbands, and the guy that you're shacking up with right now, you're not married to. And it turns out that he was right. Now, what Christians tend to think, some of them, is that, well, as long as you sort of do it God's way or do it some reasonable way, then you're married or you're not married. You don't really have to go by the law of the land. But that's not what the Bible assumes at all. The Bible assumes that you're married or divorced by the law of the land.
Okay.
So when this woman, you know, she's been married to five guys, she's lived with five guys and divorced five times, now she's living with another guy, hey, he's my husband. He's my husband. You know, my neighbors don't care. I don't care. He doesn't care. He's my husband. Jesus said, he's not your husband. You didn't. And that they were Samaritans. Jesus said that Samaritans don't know God. But they were Samaritans, and yet God expected that she should be married by the law and divorced by the law. So anyway, by the way, Ezra chapter 10, verse 3.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I might have that wrong. Put away all those. Oh, yeah, that's it. Ezra 10:3. So Ezra, the priest, was a bit angry that all these Jews had married Gentile women. And so he confronted them. And they prayed to God. And Ezra said, all right, let's make a covenant with our God to put away all these wives and let it be done according to the law. And it took quite a while to do it, as in months. Now, for a divorce to take 2 years, certainly that could happen. It could take 2 years or more. But I would think that that's an extreme. And nowadays, divorces could be done and frequently are done much more quickly.
Sure, if they both can agree to some things.
Well, no.
A lot of times one will.
Yeah, but assuming they disagree with one another, it still doesn't need to take 2 years.
Yeah.
That seems to be an exaggeration to help make the position seem more tenable.
Sure. And I think that he would be interested in – how does that tie in with the separation from the divorce? Is that still not complete? So it's still through the divorce, right?
I don't understand the question.
Well, in Pennsylvania, you can get a legal separation, which is
that where he is?
Yes.
Where are you located?
Pennsylvania. We both live in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Greenville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
I didn't know. I think that would be his other question. If there's a legal separation and it's just a process of getting completed, you know, through the divorce. I guess his concern is he's here like, okay.
Well, does he
understand what's that?
Does he think he could marry another woman right now?
Oh, no, he knows that can't happen.
Well, why not?
He's wondering, does he have to sit home and not start dating or looking for that next wife?
Yeah, it's while you're still because you know what he does, and there's always reasons for why things are right or wrong.
Uh-huh.
It's not just like legalistic or God's way of raining on our parade. Mm-hmm. What it does is it undermines marriage and the exclusivity of marriage. And so all the people that he influences, like let's say there's young people in his family, and those young people will look at this and say, well, you could still be married and date.
I see.
You don't have to only, you know, you could be married and date.
Yeah.
And so that I could think of this exact circumstance with people I know just in the last month or so where I had this discussion with someone else. And he said, you know, the divorce takes 8 months, 9 months, and so I could start dating now. And I said, no, you can't. That's wrong. And he said, oh, no, I could. And I said, you'll be undermining the very concept of marriage to all those around you. And he said, no, that's not true. Within 1 week, I had one of this guy's young relatives call me up and explain how they could, him and his girlfriend could just get married just by saying they're married.
Huh.
And he quoted. And for his evidence, he pointed to his relative who's getting a divorce, who's dating.
Yeah.
And he said, look, he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was within 1 week of the prediction.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting. I didn't even think of that angle of it, and I'm sure he didn't either.
Well, right and wrong always is for a reason.
Sure.
It's never just because I said so.
Yeah. And I think his and it's not like he's done this yet. He's been really, he says, I've been in the Bible. He says, I can't find anything to put the argument on one side of the fence or not, although you've given me some references for him to look at now.
Yeah, and let me give you a third principle that's in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible, when it sets out laws, certain moral laws,
mm-hmm.
and if you could hold on after this break, I want to give you a principle in the Bible.
Okay.
+1 800 836 9278. And you know, we have another toll free number too. And that's our secret number. That's 1-888-8-NYARK. 1-888-836-9278. That number goes directly to the order line. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go right to the order line. 800-8-NYARK. You can be sent either to the show as calling in or to the order line. Just, you know, some people wonder about what is our 888-NYART number used for that we have on the website and in some of our print literature. So I've been telling you about the plot manuscript and dear friends from all over the country who say that the fun thing about reading the plot, not that you have to read the plot. You can get this yourself. You can do this yourself. Read through the Bible once or twice or a few times over and put together an overview of the story of the Bible. Put together an overview of the story. Not all the doctrines. Not all the details. Not all the issues that Christians fight over like crazy. like baptism or speaking in tongues or the rapture, keeping the law or the Sabbath or whatever. Not all those things, but the story of the Bible. And it's our contention that most Christians are weak on the storyline. The story, what happened? What happened with Israel? What happened with the 12 apostles? What happened with Paul? As they interact and interrelate, what happened? Never mind why or what does it mean, but what happened? And most Christians don't know. Like, I'll give you a little example. Before the flood, God gave these laws where he said, don't execute anyone and only eat vegetables, vegetarian. After the flood, he said, execute everybody you can and eat meat. Why? +1 800-836-9278. Now, in a moment, we're going to get to Johnny from California about Christian voting, and we're going to go back to Jeff. And I was sort of joking there in that commercial when I said he said, execute everyone you can, every convicted murderer that you can. If there's a convicted murderer and you could execute him, God command it. You have to execute him. So why? Why did he say two laws before the flood? And then right after the flood, why did he reverse both of those laws? Most Christians don't know that that happened. They don't know that he gave two laws before the flood, and then after the flood, he reversed both of them. Most Christians don't know that. Actually, it was 3 and 3. But you have to read the plot. But why? You can't know why unless you know what happened. What's the story? And that's only in the first 9 chapters of the Bible. And we have 1,180 more chapters to go. And most Christians don't know the story of what happened in the Bible, so how could they possibly understand the details? That's what Bob Inert Live is on the air for. So back to Jeff. Jeff, real quickly, there's a principle in the law in the Bible where God talks about divorce and marriage and divorce. And also, now did – okay, we lost – all right. So let me just answer the question, even though we lost Jeff. God does not lay out all the particulars of how you get married and how you get divorced, or when you leave your inheritance in the Mosaic Law, why you need to leave your inheritance, how you need to leave your inheritance. Who's qualified to get married? Who's not qualified to get married? God didn't lay out all the details. When he gave the Mosaic Law, he was building upon what society already knew about marriage and divorce and inheritance. And he gave some of the finer points. He refined some of the laws that were already in place. So he said, for example, when you get married, if you get divorced, then you shouldn't get remarried. And you can't get remarried to this person under this particular circumstance. He gave some finer points, but he didn't give the basics because he assumed that the culture knew the basics because they did. They knew the basics. And so we have an obligation to use our brains, understand history, understand the culture in which God was revealing the Bible, and apply those things as we understand the Bible. Otherwise, well, the Bible doesn't say that, you can't marry a one-year-old. It doesn't say that. So could you marry a one-year-old? No. But God didn't have to say that because he built the laws of marriage and divorce on top of a culture that was already functioning, and he clarified the matters on the edges. And so you have to understand that. So if somebody says, well, the Bible doesn't address a lot of things. like, you know, like I just said, child molestation. It doesn't address that. Does that mean it's okay? Of course not. All right, let's go now to California. Johnny, speak your mind.
Hey, hi, Bob, and welcome back from your digging trip.
Yeah, digging up dinosaur fossils. We had such a good time. Thank you, Johnny. And those paleontologists, they're coming through Denver in a few days, and we're going to meet them for lunch, and they're going to look at dinosaur footprints that's on the property of some of our church members. Have a beautiful acreage in the mountains outside of Denver, and they got dinosaur fossils on their property. And so these paleontologists are going to check it out.
Hey, Bob, what I called over was I've heard you criticize, and rightly so, both Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
And typically in most elections here in the U.S., it's usually going to be one of them two that win, and it's going to shape the policy for the next few years.
Mm.
And
you're calling from California.
Oh, yeah.
And this is Arnold Free Radio.
That's why I haven't mentioned his name.
All right.
anyway.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, where do Christians, where do they fit in the political process, if at all? Do we just sit around and, you know, sometimes you get somebody who has a really radical policy,
mm-hmm.
and then you have somebody who has a less radical policy, and both are going to help ruin our society as time goes on.
Right, right.
But one at a faster pace.
Well, I've never sat, you know, the social, the culture war that we're in, I've never sat it out. But I've often identified that the Republican and the Democrat are both evil. Or they're both advocating laws that are so godless that they're damning to our country. And so typically, I'll oppose them both. And if there's not that a leader of a country has to be perfect, you can't get perfect. And conservative Christians and pro-life Christians, they get angry when we make this point I'm about to make. But, you know, good. I'm glad they get angry. They should think why they're getting angry. If you lived in Nazi Germany and, you know, they had elections, right? Hitler won he became chancellor by the same percent of vote that put Bill Clinton in office. And so somebody's running, you know, there are a couple of Nazis and the one guy, or there's a Marxist and a Nazi. And the one guy says, I'm going to kill 1,000 Jews if I get elected. And the other guy says, I'm only going to kill 5 Jews if I get elected. So who are you going to vote for?
Well, I understand your point, but what happens if the murderous legislation is already in place? And, of course, we'd like to see. And we're, and
so, okay.
I assume that you're making a comparison to abortion.
Yeah, to abortion, for example.
Well, in this state, it turns out that even if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, abortion will still be legal based on some legislation, I think, that Gray Davis signed.
And the supposed pro-life U.S. Supreme Court justices like Scalia and Thomas would say that, well, they would uphold that. They would uphold abortion in California because your state law has legalized it. And the pro-life community is so twisted in their thinking that they brag about those guys as though they're pro-life judges.
But
they're not pro-life. They're pro-choice state by state.
If we had a candidate that believed that abortion was wrong in all cases except for rape and incest, which is flawed, but still it saves other babies, most other babies I would imagine, why criticize someone who chooses to support that person? We know it's not perfect, and hopefully the person isn't satisfied with that progress.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is better than nothing.
Okay, let's talk about that. When someone says, I'm against abortion except when the father is a criminal, a rapist, right? That position is a window to their heart. What they're telling you is, I am a liar, and I will use the blood of innocent children in order to get political power. That's what they're telling you. Because if you say, if they say, I'm against abortion except when the father is a rapist, and you say, okay, why are you against abortion? And they will be very uncomfortable telling you, and they won't tell you unless they think they're at a pro-life banquet. But generally, they won't tell you, but if they're at a pro-life banquet, they might say, because abortion is murder. But normally, they won't say that. So if they say, I'm against abortion because it's murder, and then you say, well, then why would you murder a baby because his father was a criminal? Then what do they say? You see, they can't think for 1 minute and justify their position, not for 1 minute.
So that person is double-minded and therefore should not be supported?
Well, it would be like someone saying, I'm against killing the Jews, but I really know that to get elected, I can't just take that extreme position. I have to say I'm against killing the Jews unless there's a Jewish businessman who's put your sent him bankrupt. So if there's a Jewish businessman who's bankrupted a German business, then you could kill him. Or if there's, and this was a law in Nazi Germany, if there's a Jew who marries an Aryan, a Jewish man marries a German woman, then he's to be put to death. And then the German judges upheld that law and killed Jewish men for marrying German women. So you've got some guy who says, I'm against killing Jews except if they marry Germans, or except if they put a German business put a German worker out of business.
But
then,
Bob,
you could kill him.
You would believe that it would be best if Christians did not choose to vote for one or the other?
I vastly think it would be better. Obviously, if I did it, Johnny,
I'll tell you what. I think it would be better
make
because
the
people who depend on our vote, the pro-life vote, they wouldn't take us for granted.
Well, here's what's
like
happening. Well, here's what's happening, Johnny. We are calculating. We're making this pragmatic calculation that if we support the killing of some people by our leaders tell us we're going to support killing some innocent children. They tell us that. They brag about it, in fact. And so we make a calculation, pragmatic. And we say, you know, we think that if we support that, in the end, we'll be better off. So we're going to do consciously, knowingly, willingly kill some innocent children so that things will be better. Now, I agree we can't win the whole battle in one fell swoop. I know that. But I'm not going to, if the knife was in your hand and you had that one child in front of you that George W. Bush will kill by his policy and the judges he appoints, and the knife was in your hand instead of a voting booth ballot, it was a knife. And they said, if you kill this one child, George W. Bush will get elected. Are you going to kill that one child, Johnny? Well, then don't flip the switch. I want to thank you for calling. God bless you. All right. Yeah, you know, if we only will sacrifice a few kids to the Republican Party, then America will be better off. You know how long I've been hearing that? You know, we've been on the air for 12 years. I remember the Republican freshman in Congress, the landslide, that all the Christians were ecstatic. When was that? 94, was it? And everything was going to get better. And I went on the air. I was the only Christian talk show host in the whole country who said, you guys are all celebrating. 2 years from now, it's going to be worse. And it was worse. We're deceiving ourselves. It's Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.